Well, good day, friends. Welcome to The Ministry and Me. It's wonderful to have this next half hour with you as we come to reflect on our lives and ministry and how we can be used by the Lord to do truly wonderful and magnificent things in our sphere of influence, whether that be at home, whether it's in a church, a cell group, whether it's in our office and workplace, wherever it may be, how the Lord can use us and wants to use us to bring about God's perfect will and plan for society. Now, this show comes to you just about 2 weeks before Christmas. Can you believe that this year has already passed? And here we are again, preparing ourselves for the celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ. And I've been spending quite a lot of my time over the last number of weeks writing letters and getting some reports in and recording one or two things specifically with a Christian theme to encourage people to recognize again the importance of recognizing and understanding the miracle that God should choose to come and live amongst us. And today what I'm wanting to share with you in this half hour is an encouragement and hopefully a few little insights that could help you to make the message of the birth of Jesus Christ more significant for those whom you encounter, for those that you work amongst, for your family, for your friends, so that Jesus himself may be honored and blessed to be recognized and celebrated this Christmas season. Now, one of my favorite books comes from the Christian author C.S. Lewis, and I so enjoy this book. It's called The Screwtape Letters, and the reason I enjoy the book so much is because it's an absolute classic of literature. Not only is it exceptionally well written, but it's also humorous, and as with all of C.S. Lewis's writings, it has a very deep and profound theological message. In one of the narratives of this book, The Screwtape Letters, we encounter how the demons are trying to work together to win Christians away from their faith. The whole book, by the way, is a narrative about how demons bumble along in their attempts to try and thwart the will and the purposes of God. And listen to this little excerpt from the book. Three apprentice devils were asked by Satan, chief of the devils, for ideas on how to tempt and ruin people. "Tell them that there is no God," said the first demon. Satan replied, "That won't delude many, as they know that there is a God indeed." "Tell them that there is no hell," suggested a second. "You'll deceive no one, as they know that there is a hell for sin," Satan retorted. The third said, "I will tell them that there is no hurry." "Go," said Satan, "for in telling them that, you will ruin thousands." "I will tell them that there is no hurry." You know, when I read this for the first time, it struck me just how true it really is. Most of us live our lives without a sense of urgency. We live it without that desire that we need to be ready for the return of Jesus Christ, our King. And I wonder how many folks who are listening today function like that. You know, I'm the kind of person who likes to plan meticulously. My wife often laughs because I have hundreds of lists. Sometimes I even keep lists of my lists. I like to write things down and tick them off. I'm the kind of person who operates best under pressure. You know, I found when I was at university and I was studying for exams, instead of spending a study week studying, I would usually only spend 1 or 2 days before the exams really cramming everything in so that I could be ready for the exam. Do you know what I'm talking about? I'd procrastinate until the pressure got so high that I eventually had to get to my work. Somehow, the pressure helped me to focus. It removed all distractions, it shaped my priorities, and it got me into my books in earnest. Well, thankfully, that worked out well. But you know what I've come to realize? That there are some things in life which you cannot cram. You cannot fit them into a very, very short space of time. There are some things in life which cannot be left to the last moment. Can you imagine, for example, a wife trying to cram her pregnancy? How crazy would that be, trying to cram the birth of your child? Or how about a husband and wife trying to cram their relationship? The same goes, for example, with farming. You can't get a good crop by cramming seed into the ground, overwatering it, putting too much heat and sunlight on it, and then expect to have anything of true worth coming out. On the obituary of the boxing champion Salvador Sanchez, who died at age 23, it was reported that a month before he died in a car crash, he said, "I'm only 23 and I've got all the time left in the world." Wow, how sad it is that he didn't recognize that every moment of life is precious, that every instance of life needs to be grabbed and used to the full. Now, let me ask you this question. How would you live if you knew that Jesus was returning today? I'm sure that most of us would try to cram to get ready for the Lord's return. I know I certainly would. You know, I would like to answer some people as Tony Campolo said. He said, "I've got no idea when Jesus is coming back. I'm on the welcoming committee, not the planning committee." And I don't know about you, but I quite like that little statement. You know, I want to be on the welcoming committee for Jesus, not necessarily on the planning committee. I don't know the time when he is coming back. And you know that we will never know when Jesus Christ is going to return. I think it would be so sad if Jesus returns for the second time and finds that we are just as underprepared for him as when he arrived the first time. Imagine that Jesus has to say again those words of John's gospel, "I came amongst my own and they did not recognize me." So the truth is that preparing for the coming of Jesus Christ cannot be crammed. And so today I want to encourage you as a person who loves Jesus Christ to focus on preparing yourself and preparing others to celebrate the truth of what it means that Christ himself, the God who created the whole universe, would come to live amongst us. And so today we're going to talk about preparing in a significant and true way for Christmas. And I want to encourage you, why not buy a copy of this CD and make it available to two or three of your friends or family members, helping them so that this year or next year they may be better prepared to celebrate the coming of the King. I want to encourage you to note a few points as you prepare yourself, not only to celebrate for Christmas, but also to prepare yourself to celebrate Christ's return. Let's not succumb to the tricks of the devil and be fooled into thinking, as that one demon said in the Screwtape Letters, "There is no hurry." So, what can we do to prepare ourselves and prepare others for the coming of the King? Step one, the very first thing that we need to do is we need to do what the wise men did. If you go and read for yourself in Luke chapter 2 from verses 8 to 20, you'll read how the wise men and the shepherds went to go and find Jesus. Now, the first thing that they did, we read in verses 15 and 16 of Luke chapter 2, is they went to seek and find. In Luke's account of Jesus coming among us, we read about a group of shepherds who, upon hearing the good news of Jesus, did what every one of us should do. They went to investigate the news for themselves. They went to check things out to make sure that indeed what they had heard was true. The Bible tells us in verse 50 that they said to one another, "Let's go to Bethlehem and see this thing which has happened." I think that sometimes people treat religious experiences like holidays. They say only other people have them. Well, friends, that simply is not true. The Christ who came at Christmas wants to reveal himself in love, in grace, and in power to everyone. Jesus came for you and for me. You see, we are told in Jeremiah 29 verse 13 that we will find God when we seek him with all of our hearts. We are told in James chapter 4 verse 2 that we do not have the blessing of God because we do not seek for it, we do not ask for it. You see, it was only when the shepherds went to find Jesus that we are told in verse 16 that they found him. The truth about this Christmas is that, friends, I can say to you, you will not find Jesus unless you go looking for him. And those whom you love will not find Jesus unless you help them to look for Christ who is in their midst. Now, I'm sure that many of us have already begun our Christmas preparations, and I certainly hope that you have. I hope you've been saving and that you've bought a few gifts and that the meal is almost ready. In fact, most of us have probably already sent out a few Christmas cards. We've set the dates and made the gatherings for family, and perhaps we've even bought that special gift. But let me ask you the question, how many of us have done any real and significant preparation for the most incredible miracle of Christmas, the coming of Christ? How many of us have taken the time to search the scriptures, to sit before the Lord in quiet and set aside the time to say, Jesus, what does your coming amongst us mean for me? What does it mean for the place in which I work, for the people that I work with every day? What does it mean for the systems and structures within which these people work? You see, friends, just as the shepherds were not to find the King of Kings in a palace or a flashy royal court, so too we cannot expect to find the true meaning of God with us in a shopping mall or an office party or under a Christmas tree. And so I want to say to you, if your only preparation for Christmas is those things, if it's gifts and engagements and getting together with other people, then you would be disappointed this Christmas because you may not encounter the Savior who came at Christmas time to change you and change the whole world. So the first thing that you can do is you can seek and find. Step number two that you can take in order to discover the Christ of Christmas this year is go and tell. Now, the next part of our preparation about making Christmas more blessed and more real for everyone this year is this. It points us to a principle of human life, and that is that good news cannot be kept to ourselves. It cannot be kept under wraps. I mean, think of this. Any truly good news has to be shared with people. And I wonder how many of us will do what the shepherds did. How many of us would actually intentionally share the good news of the birth of Jesus, the good news of God coming amongst us with those whom we love? How many of us are going to take the time to write a letter to a friend to say, you know, I thought of you this year, I love you, and because I love you, I want to tell you about someone who loves you even more? How many of us will remind our friends and family that because Jesus came as a baby, he could die as a man, that because he became a man, we could be reunited with God? Because he was born into a sinful world, he could take the sins of the world upon himself. What wonderful news this is. Listen to how the writer of the Hebrews puts it. He says, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our human weaknesses. Rather, we have one who has been tempted in every way just as we are, yet he was without sin." Now listen to verse 16. "Therefore, let us approach the throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace in our time of need." You know, it's interesting that the writer of the Hebrews there uses that word, "for we do not have a priest who is unable to sympathize with our human weakness." You see, there's a significant difference between sympathy and pity. If the writer had used the word pity, it would have meant that Jesus was separated from us. But the very essence of the message of Christmas that we can share with those whom we love is that Jesus comes to live among us. He comes to live our life. He comes to experience our pain, our joy, our hope, and our sorrow. And so the interesting thing is that because Jesus sympathizes, he experiences all of the things that we go through. Think about this for a moment. Jesus came into the world through a birth canal. He was born into a stable. He was reliant upon his mother Mary to change his nappy and feed him. Jesus knew what it was in his life to be hungry and cold and tired and disappointed and hurt. But he also knew the joy of living fully for his Father. You see, the difference between pity and sympathy is that pity separates. You know, I once got a very bad haircut from my brother. My mother gave me some money when I was a young boy to go and get a haircut, and my brother and I went and bought sweets with it. And so he cut my hair. And boy, it was patchy and terrible. And when I got to school, I could see that my friends took pity on me. They said things like, "Boy, we're glad we're not you." You see, pity is an emotion that separates, but empathy is an emotion that says, because I understand what you are going through, because I have felt what you felt, I love you all the more. I love you more completely. And that is what Jesus does for us. Jesus comes into the world to say, I have lived your life, I've understood your suffering, and because of that, I love you all the more. Are you going to be willing to share that message with someone this year? You see, just like the shepherds, one of the greatest joys of the message of Christmas comes with telling others. So step number one is seek and find. Step number two is go and tell. Step number three is hear and wonder. Now let me ask you an honest question today. How many times have you heard the Christmas message? How many times have we heard about the miracle of God who comes and lives amongst us, who becomes one of us? I can say in my life, I've probably heard it 37 times, because that's how old I am, 37 years, maybe even more. And you know what the sad thing is? The danger is because we hear it so frequently, we forget what a miracle it is that God would become human, and not just that, what God would do for you and me. We need to recapture the wonder of the story, to have it leave us speechless. That the creator of the whole universe, the God and King that exists before everything and will exist long after everything has passed, that majesty and authority chooses to be born as a baby, not in a palace but in a stable. Chooses to come not as a prince but to live as a pauper. Chooses not to die in luxury but to take death upon the cross. And why does he do this? Jesus does this so that he can identify with you, so that he can know your needs and worries and concerns and struggles. Friends, this is a miracle that leaves me speechless. It should strike us like the little boy who came home from Sunday school. When his mom asked him what he had learnt, he said the following. He said, "We learnt that when the Israelites were leaving Egypt, at one point they got to a sea called the Red Sea. And Pharaoh was chasing them. So they got their best engineers to quickly build a bridge. All of them got over to the other side. It was a major project. Then when Pharaoh got onto the bridge, the Israelites got their explosive experts to destroy the bridge, and all of the Egyptians drowned." His mother said to him, "Is that really what you learnt at Sunday school?" And he replied, "No. But if I told you what I really learnt from the teacher, you would never believe me." You see, friends, that sense of awe at the message of Christmas, that the God of the universe would come to live our life because he loves you, that should leave you standing still. And so I want to encourage you to take some time to pray about that, to consider everything that God gave up so that he could love you and love me. Don't simply let the message of Christmas wash over you. Don't let it be something that you've heard before. Let Christmas remind you of the miracle of God who comes amongst us. So step number one is seek and find. Step number two is go and tell. Step number three is hear and wonder. And here's step number four, keep and ponder. Verse 19 of Luke chapter 2. You know that Luke is the only one of the gospel writers that tells us about Mary, the mother of Jesus, and what her reaction was to the birth of Jesus. Luke tells us that Mary kept and pondered all these things in her heart. The interesting thing is that the Greek word which is used for ponder, symbalo, literally means to celebrate and to closely observe. It's almost like a mother who looks at her newborn baby lying in the crib, and she is amazed that lying there is a whole human person with thoughts, a person who breathes, a person with a whole life within them. You celebrate and you observe that child closely. The challenge for us this Christmas should be, as we celebrate and observe Christmas, that we are able to look beyond the commercials and the sentimentalism of it, that we're able to look through the packed shopping malls and the maxed out credit cards, that we try to find and celebrate the real significance, the significance of new life, the new life that Jesus gives us, and that we do what Mary did. We ponder it, we symbolo it, we celebrate it, and we observe it closely as Mary did with Jesus. So the fifth step, the fifth and final step is this. Step number one is that we need to seek and find Jesus. Step number two is go and tell. Step number three is hear and wonder. Step number four is to keep and ponder the miracle of Jesus. But step number five is perhaps the most significant thing that you can do with Christmas this year. You'll read it in verse 20. It's to return and praise. You see, Luke chapter 2 verse 20 tells us that once the shepherds had gone to find Jesus, once they had been there and found him, once they had gone and told others to come and worship him, once they had heard the miracle and wondered about it, once they had kept it in their hearts and pondered it, they returned to praise. You see, they went back to their flocks, to their everyday responsibilities, but the verse tells us they did so glorifying and praising God. Now think about this for a moment. What does it mean to glorify God? It's not as if glory is something that we have. I've often heard people saying, "Oh God, we give you glory." Have you ever heard that? As if glory is something that we have and God doesn't have, and we carry buckets of the stuff and we give God a little bit every now and then. No, God is glorious, and God's glory is all around us. And what had happened with the shepherds that first Christmas is that they had suddenly been awakened to the glory of God around them. And so they returned to their everyday lives to make God's glory known. They celebrate it by seeing it in the ordinary tasks. They see it in their relationships, they see it in their work, and they make it known to others. You see, their lives were forever changed because of what they had experienced. And they may have gone back to the same jobs, but I can tell you they were not the same men. And so here's the challenge that I want to leave with you today. How will this Christmas change your everyday life, not just Christmas Day? You see, when Christmas 2008 has come and gone, the spirit of Christmas, the spirit of the Christ who is incarnate at Christmas, needs to have encountered you. Remember this, Christmas cannot be crammed. And so don't let Satan fool you into thinking that there is no hurry to preparing yourself and preparing those whom you love for the truth and the miracle of Jesus born amongst us. Don't let him fool you into keeping the message to yourself. Don't let him fool you into not hearing the message and wandering with awe. Don't let him fool you from celebrating. Don't let him fool you from returning to work with real praise, real celebration, and a new knowledge of the glory of God. And so, friends, I want to encourage you this year in your life, in your family, in your ministry, and in your work, prepare yourself adequately and take the responsibility to prepare others to truly celebrate the coming of Christ. Well, friends, it's been wonderful to spend the last half hour with you. And you've been listening to the program, The Ministry and Me. I'm your host, Dr. Dion Foster, and it's been wonderful to be with you. And I wish you and your families every blessing this Christmas season. I'd love to hear from you. And if you'd like to drop me an email, you can do so. My email address is digitaldion@gmail.com. I'll spell that for you in a moment. It's DIGITALDION, Digital Dion, Dion with an I, @gmail.com. And I would love to hear from you. May the Lord bless you in your ministry and in your work as you find ways to honor and serve him in all that you do. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.